That Is Whatever Makes You Happy by Jennifer Hudson and Juicy J from the most bougiest series on TV back in the day. This is the Empire cast. I had forgotten Jennifer Houston was on this series for a minute. But that's how I'm going to start out this podcast. Happy Sunday afternoon. I'm recording from Mississippi Avenue, and this is Ten Fro, and I'm doing what makes me happy at this time. And it's very simple. I am enjoying reading, eating, finding out, and being encouraged and inspired by what I found out about my heritage, and finding out there are black and brown people doing some really great things, and there's great content streaming about our black experience and how cuisine, African American cuisine, has basically changed international cuisine. And I'll be reading from listeners because evidently I got a whole big thing about fussing about why I'm going to continue to write and read my own stuff, because you can get in some issues and get your shit removed from podcasts. Just ask people at Spotify. And enjoy this vibe. And I hope this song will continue to make you happy. That's Oops, I Did It Again, Britney Spears, the 1990s, 2000s, white, teen scream, queen idol. And as I always state, didn't say at the top of the show, but everything that you could hear in background, it's available for immediate streaming on iTunes, my one podcast playlist. And all rights are reserved. I give everybody credit where credit is due. And this is just music that has become parts of the background and theme of my life. And I hope you will enjoy it. And what a great way to introduce this part of the podcast, where I'm talking about, and just in general, black excellence and just myself for once. Not too long ago, I submitted my DNA for analysis through 23andMe. Eventually, I'm going to get a report because I think they also do specific genetic testing. BRCA, the breast cancer, my susceptibility to breast cancer because of my strong family history. And I have not yet to be tested. So, but one of the things, because one of my favorite shows is Who Do You Think You Are? And then there's another one, Finding Your Roots on PBS. And that's where I got the idea of submitting my admixture. But I hadn't really looked at it until this weekend closely. And it came about why I looked it up and got inspiration for this part of the podcast. Who do I think you, where am I from? And I'm blackity black. It's because, very simply, I had done it, paid the money and had it, but never looked at it. And what encouraged me was when I watched High on the Hog on Netflix. And they were talking about the African diaspora and how we live and the food that we have created has influenced cuisine in the South, across America and the world, where it comes from. They started in Benin, which is West Africa, through the Gates of No Return, through Sullivan's Island. Most lighter immigrants to this country immigrated through Ellis Island, but ours was the auction block at Sullivan's Island near Charleston, South Carolina. And the rich African heritage of the Gullah people that still inhabit, though a smaller population in that area. And the information, the wealth of information through 23andMe, how my mitochondrial DNA is in millions and maybe billions of people, that starts from one female ancestor deep in the Congo or sub-Saharan of Africa, and how I'm really that bitch. I really am blackity black because my genetic admixture is firmly on the west coast of Africa, primarily Nigeria, Ghana, Sierra Leone, Senegal, Gambia, and just Angola, and just very, very, very deep in western part of the continent. But the admixture, it goes from like east to west, basically following the diaspora that was slave trade rich. Although parts of the our past as African Americans is really dark and macabre. The agony of the slave trade and slavery in this country, you can't negate and you can't soften that, because it was a horrible institution that basically we all still have a collective PTSD. But there's also beauty within that. And the beauty within that has a lot to do with the rich traditions that is told through our foods. Some of the things that you never really thought about that were truly, purely African, like yams, which are different than sweet potatoes. The sweet potato is the American iteration of that, but the yams is firmly ours. Plantains, peppers, and even the original pitmasters are all West African or African in meat preservation and meat preparation. These are things that were traditionally, truly are within our DNA. Our people had a rich hunting and gathering tradition. And we used things, all parts of the animal, from the rooter to the tooter. So when you gave us bits of leftover pork and snout and chung and the cheeks of animals, we already knew how to prepare that, because again, it was in our DNA. And things that, and just by my little bit of inspiration and looking up things about Nigerian cuisine and Ghanaian cuisine and Senegambian cuisine, and even the cloth, what I'm finding that we always had to make do by what we actually have. And that narrative where there is either from a caste system or socioeconomic that Africans look at African Americans or other people that are outside of Africa is poor them, and there's a separation that we're not really Africans. But that is a narrative spun by people that will be directly affected once we learn how to be together. And the benefit of us coming back together, the narrative that we are not, or that we would not be welcome back in Africa, is such a lie, because everything that I've actually seen is the welcoming and the open arms, and we are brothers, and it's like they want us to have a reverse diaspora, and the gates of no return are the gates of coming back home. Slavery was a bitch. It really broke up traditions, but we've then have subsequently made our own traditions, and that are truly rooted in the sub-Saharan and Saharan traditions, the original traditions. And it's okay, even at this late stage, to embrace those things. So even though we find out and people become, how can I say it? People may take issue with you finding out who you are and being proud of that. You find out that what we used to think that separated us really makes us a lot alike, and how you can take different traditions and then fold it into your own and make it uniquely your own. And that's what that's about. 3, 2, 1, that is Sierra, her Level Up, her single. I believe this came out in 2019. No, you want to see yummy, yummy all in your tummy. Level up, 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 level up. All this on me so yummy, all this sounds so yummy. And that is another single featuring Sierra and Fat Man. I think Fat Man Scoop, and of course Misdemeanor on the hook. This is from the cookbook, which I find completely hysterical that this entire episode is dedicated to food and what makes me happy. Food and flowers is what I constantly always talk about. I've talked about this entire episode, and it also is a great way between Level Up and Lose Control by Misdemeanor. These three kids actually, that have been directly affected by COVID, and I highlight them in this section of the podcast by local kid number 10, Jose Thomas Pascal, lost his mother during the beginning of the COVID panorama, and he still is going to greater heights as number 10 on the soccer team here in Red Bank. There's Adriana and Xavier Solomon of Brooklyn, New York, who were basically orphaned when their mother passed away again at the beginning of the pandemic, and they're still living and going on and prospering even with this such great loss. And they're taking the loss and using it to push them. Xavier said he had to grow up fast, but they don't want that to only be their defining moment. They want people to know that you can still overcome from such great loss. And these kids are just so tremendous. And then I've added a couple of new books to my chatter books. The Book of Cookery by Martha Washington, of all people. But check it out. It was probably Hercules that was the classically trained chef who was a slave that... And even in spite of him being shown his place, he still created some of these greatest cuisine. And probably the recipes that Martha Washington is getting credit for, it was this great chef who was enslaved that was actually the creator of those recipes. Take that. And again, I would have never known that until I watched High on the Hog on Netflix this past weekend. The book is at the documentary is based on by Jessica B. Harris's book, High on the Hog, A Culinary Journey from Africa to America, and how our cuisine has influenced the world. How great is that? Black excellence all around. That's It is Mama Said Knock You Out by LL Cool J. This is definitely embedded in the 90s, and it's a great way to start this part of the podcast where I'll be reading from listeners my first foray into sci-fi. Actually hope I will knock you out by my lyrical stylings. I started writing this book, and I started reading it online as a part of possibly publishing it in total, self-publishing in total online. But I am going to continue to read it because it allows me to revisit the lines and actually to make edits as I go live. And one of the things that I've actually found that happened to me this week, I got a notification from Spotify that there could be a copyright infringement. Anytime you read, and I think this came from me reading, so when I was into this historical fiction slant, when I watched Bridgerton, and I read from the original author of the print, the Duke series, and what I did is I only read like a couple of paragraphs, but evidently you can't, any reproductions, in mask or not, you can't actually, you're not supposed to do that without permission of the, writer and pay royalties, even though I bought the book and I could read it. No, it don't work that way. You have to pay even more money, to be able to use their copyrighted material. That's neither here nor there. So that means I just have to create my own and read my own. And I'm still wrestling with the storyline about adding in to suss the story out without being too overly detailed, because I don't have to put everything in this book, because the way I've written it, I want it to have multiple parts. So this is all rooted into discovering that the replacements, this group of higher functioning entities that are part of the continuum of life, have been meddling in the historical context for humanity. These fools are only meddling to disrupt the existence of humanity. That's the bottom line. They want humanity to use their worst inclinations to destroy themselves, so then they can take over Earth and this particular part of the universe. But the unpredictability of humanity makes that not possible. And with COVID actually blew up their game, so to speak. So in this next section, I named it Don't Call It a Comeback, because we wrestle, as humans we wrestle, are we the only ones in existence in the universe? Obviously, through this book, I honestly believe that we are not. And it is not only a recognition that the concept of Messiah coming back, the concept of humanity existing against the odds, and the existence of other beings besides ourselves is a reality. And so that's why was the impetus and an influence, inspiration for this particular part of the book. And it's called Don't Call It a Comeback. Creation is a notion of a primitive brain not able to grasp the complexity of existence. I basically should say that should be creation theory is a notion of a primitive brain not able to grasp the complexity of existence. A bit arrogant when you think that other beings had to look exactly like man to create man, when that is only a small part of creation. Religions only got it partially wrong. The power of coexisting energies, edicts to ban things that could potentially hurt population growth of humans, or because they diverted those teachers who were more diverted by debauchery instead of elevating the minds of humanity. I put that as a sentence. I don't understand what that is. I'm going to have to rework that. What if humans' perception of God was actually a continuum entity? What if humanity exists because of the conversion of those entities? What if they do not require to be worshipped, but only require humanity to exist? And not tear itself apart, chasing some rabbit down the rabbit hole. We have to evolve much as the continuing entity did. So what of the chosen people of Israel? What of the Christians, Muslim, Buddhist? Limited explanations for what came before and a means to reconcile with requirements that make no sense. All with messengers or messiahs of sorts to release us all from the bondage of superstition into the existence of an entirely different level. Also, Mother Mary or even the prostitute Mary Magdalene, who actually may not have been but a woman who owned her sexual power and made no apologies. This freedom not acceptable in the male chauvinistic world. Both Marys, vessels for the word and protectors of the word. Both apostles in their own right, but silenced by the maniacal patriarchal limited system. Another epoch wasted. Still, the human brain could then conceptualize to understand the continuum entity creator is not to worship, but to be in a bidirectional communion with the entity. But the inherent low self-awareness would miss all the ancient opportunities for connection. Only when the communion was used for nefarious actions or subjugation would see the humans punished or the worst loss of life. Translated into worship and never reaching beyond. The perfect creative intelligentsia hybrid overly personified in the doll Grace J. As the malicious defected. And the replacement government apprehended, art emerged with a new appreciation for more controversial art forms like high drag. Glitter, diamante crystal, full ball gowns, a requirement for this artistic expression, with memories being long and expansive. I got the original inspiration for this chapter because I had binge-watched all 13 seasons of Drag Race as well as All Stars. And I don't know if the recent All Stars for this season has been released. I'm going to have to check that. But anyways, the intelligentsia and creative community had a hybrid and obvious leader in the astrophysics and drag designer Grace J. With the fall of the U.S. government in a conventional sense and the rise of a new religious understanding, acceptance and tolerance for the LGBTQ plus community, as everyone just was relieved to survive. But old prejudices rose their heads as the old ways made no sense. With self and the edicts could not exist any longer. Creatives, uber sensitive, and with a powerful gift of discernment was key to the survival in a critical world. They also were equipped as residual replacement detectors in a real sense, because many went to ground in the post-U.S. dictatorship roundups. But they also became the protectors of high art. So many museums and libraries burned or were ransacked during the years of chaos, but now many of the looted materials were being retrieved as spaces for display were restored and most virtualized. Some of the queens of drag outside of dancing and former waitresses never had important positions such as these positions, but with a new purpose, they could now operate without persecution and entertain the masses again. They would become the moral compass of surviving population who were learning acceptance for this group of creatives. The pandemic and the oppressive replaced regime caused the drag community to go literally way underground, only to emerge live action using CGI technology and transmitted with the newly developed holographic emitters by Afro Druids. The only hold over from the previous game was acceptable was the shade and cattiness of a different time, not understood in polite society. So much creative energy put on pause by governmental corruption and then the COVID scourge. Life lived in the shadows for so long, high drag came back with a vengeance, and high drag would go to new heights as an acceptable art form, finally. High drag is a celebration of life and beauty with gothic makeup and beehive wig, supporting queens playing Beethoven romance concertos as they stomp down the catwalk, all folded and included in the balls. Then Grace J and Sheila, with encouragement of Grand Maple, conceptualized the International Drag Ball. They began to obsess about indigenous representation instead of misappropriation. The headpieces of formal Vegas showgirls returned and adorning the indigenous tribes of Inca and Mayan origin. They wanted tops celebrate ornamental historical perspective as an acceptable art form. Even before the first spike heel clacked onto the virtual runway, mass appeal comes massive criticism. The ultra-moral majority and former mafiosos that ran Vegas, not understanding the new world order and not interested in creating their own place. But an ungodly bond would ensue between the surviving drag queens and the Italian mafia. The mafia had been displaced by the collapse of the power grid, and COVID killed most of the remaining family. In this new world order where life was paramount, there was no place for executioners in this new world order. Each group had to figure out their place or be resigned to a new dynamic. But the former mafia bosses seemed to be the most amenable to change. They seemed to be okay not to succumb to the pressure of territory, encroachment, and disrespect, however small. It was the evangelicals and the Jesus Only crew that held on for dear life, for a life and rightness that made no sense in this new order. This new sense of rightness without retribution for years of enslavement and police brutality without reparations was much to ask in a new order without monetary gain. These Hotep warriors dug their heels into anything that would negate their existence, including the International Drag Ball or anything they perceived as negative to their self-image. As drag reemerged, so did the intensity of the protests against balls or anything countercultural. So, Doll Sisters began to discuss the intergalactic ball with the assistance of the real military. They knew it had to be extra, so the plan for an infield Last Supper engagement at the Lundgren's farm was necessary to lull them to the sense of the old days, to debut the ball spectacular. They all converge onto the farm in electric cars and even horseback. The only Hasidic Jewish rabbi in Tennessee. the grand stage of snaking tables in the beautiful meadow stretching under the ancient Appalachian chain in Sweetwater. They all came, former politicians, former conservative magistrates, former provosts of Christian universities, all breaking bread in a field with survivors and a family they would never know before the scourge. Through the holographic emitters, the Coptic nunnery, Tibetan monastery, and the former harem all participated in meals resembling a Orthodox Seder. The now supplicant, witnessing the death of the Mother Superior at the Coptic nunnery, offers the blessing from the Gospel of Mary, Theotokos, Mother of God. She sings in perfect mezzo soprano the prayer of praise of Mary the Magnificat. The middle-aged Pentecostal minister sits back, crossing his hands over his ample middle, and drawls, "I didn't know we have to sit through an opera before we got to eat." Grace J comments with barely disguised disdain, "This is the hymn and prayer of praise of the Mother of God, Mary the Magnificat. Thanks so much for the blessing of Sister Mary Therese." She smiles and says, "We get to offer praises in all forms, but still people deride and descend into dumbassery when they don't understand it." Everybody laughs. Sister Mary Therese continues, "The word, all of it, has always been with us. Yahshua never left and returns in different forms. His words are no less powerful because Mara, the mother and follower, said the words. Humans wasted so much time being afraid and not knowing our place in the greater universal existence. Beauty and celebration of beauty comes in many forms. On detritus that has nothing to do with our reconciliation but serves as a distraction from our purpose. That is how the replacements operated, to distract us from this bit of knowledge." The minister, "What a bunch of gobbledygook. Next thing you're going to say, there is no God. And we need to throw in with Satan." Grace J, "I doubt if anyone would ever say that, and I put forth that evil exists because we fail to do what is sane and right. I don't agree with the circuitous route conventional religion places us to be. Back in communion or connection. Primarily the argument that theater in the form of drag has no place in uplifting and entertaining us. Former leader of the Nation of Islam. My past religion was a protest suppression of Christianity and Islam. Always a way to become superior while looking down on somebody else. And that has no place in this world order. Former Roman Catholic priest. We used our belief to control populations, but the scripture was limited interpretation of the greater message of origin and reconciliation. We only thought we were out of fellowship and not really clear in what was the fellowship. Sister Mary Therese, when you protest something so benign as a drag ball, what is true intent? The Hasidic Jewish rabbi, to distract from suffering or your own debauchery and not doing the work to help anyone else outside of your own base urges. I hate to point this out, but God didn't hate drag or expression of art or even drinking. Only when you were out of control or those teachers screwing and not spreading or teaching for a greater understanding of the word, that is when we got into trouble. That is when early saints got into trouble. Just then, as if on cue, a bright blue light appeared over the mountain ridge, pushing before it a rolling band of clouds. With Grace J begins to smirk and walks behind a changing screen, and out of the billowing clouds came menacing Black Hawk helicopters with Afro-Druid logos stunning the religious leaders to silence, but the women of the Saudi harems and Coptic nuns seated on the edge of their seats. each helicopter flying in a wing formation and hovering in a V formation in front of the audience with white steam emitted. Out of the smoke, five hard articulated runways are rolled out, and out steps a drag queen representing the Incas, Mayan, Southwest Plains people, Egypt, Pacific Rim tribe. Out of the screens came the most spectacular headdresses destined for each queen. Each queen comes out high heel to RuPaul's Sissy That Walk. The most conservative black ministers in attendance were visibly shaken. Surprisingly, the other former ministers seemed to be enjoying the spectacle before them. The women on the hollow emitters instinctively knew that this show was the first intergalactic drag ball, a broadcast going forward in spite of the opposition, and they can say they were first and were so excited. The light show and special effects with the entrance of the Black Hawks using the Terran conduits, but this would be a display of technology on a level never witnessed before. It was artistry and celebration of life. The broadcast not only witnessed across the globe, but curiously watched by the entities of the continuum. It was artistry to the chagrin, that was a repeat, get rid of that entire sentence. To the chagrin of the protesting conservatives, or in spite of the protests, was watched by everyone with access and shared watching, cautious, socializing because the pandemic was still raging. The show was brilliantly executed in defiance of those who wanted to distinguish such expressions of art. This was fashion and cosmetic crafting at its highest. These men and women became caretakers of art, cheerleaders of creation of humanity on a grand scale. After a season of death tolls, contagion, surgery, raids, trials, the intergalactic drag ball was so over the top and such a break from the dumpster fire of the previous 3.5 years. The black minister looked as if he wanted to flee or at least disrupt the proceedings, but not daring to, noticing the armed drones on the periphery. It wasn't until the finale, with the Black Hawks rising in unison as the wormhole appeared overhead, not before the former military members jumping out in glimmering shimmers of gold and silver and blue raining down, ending the show just as spectacularly as it started. Even the greatest skeptic rose to his feet, applauding in relief that they would finally be released without gunfire, but also genuinely impressed by the spectacle. Grace J says, "We may not have changed our mind about social constructs of sexual identity or any of it, but we hope to you see the deeper message of celebration of life, cultures, humanity. Hate has no place in this world." And then the transmission fades in a shimmer of glitter. The armed drones move off, and the lights go out, and the religious guests begin to move toward their transportation. Grace J and Sheila move toward the Coptic nuns, who are chatting excitedly with Doll's mother, Rama, and the partially hijabbed Saudi princes. They catch the beginnings of the plans for the next broadcast. Finally, positivity and looking forward to something that celebrates positivity. And that's how I ended this chapter of not making a comeback and just celebrating girls run the world. I encourage you to look in 1 million black girls and making a donation. I look forward to presenting another episode or another chapter from listeners in next week's broadcast. And I hope you enjoyed this podcast just as much as I've enjoyed creating it. And sometimes looking at that, maybe the message doesn't come in the form that you thought it would come in, but you miss the whole purpose of the message. Look for the message, not at the messenger, because that's how you won't miss things. And that's all about discovery, about creativity, and just finding that what makes you feel great, and you share it with everyone else, how you can share happiness. That's what music does, that's what cuisine does. We gotta find ways that can bring us together and can bring happiness. And girls are gonna be at the forefront of that, I honestly believe it. And thank you for listening, you guys. Until next time. It's hot.